everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I am your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me in listening to an episode with Michelle Alemi, an acquired anosmic originally from Haddonfield, New Jersey, and currently living in San Francisco, California, working as a traveling nurse. Michelle experienced a traumatic brain injury in February 2018, which led to her loss of smell. In addition to her new reality of living with anosmia, Michelle was also diagnosed as a teenager with diabetes. So we discussed what it's like for her having to manage both anosmia and diabetes, specifically when it comes to diet. We talk about a lot of other interesting things too. Our interview was recorded in October 2020. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me. I really am excited for this.
I'm excited to have you on as well, and I'm doing very well. So to get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from, and where do you currently live?
Yeah, so my name is Michelle Alemi. I am originally from Haddonfield, New Jersey, which is a small suburb outside of Philadelphia. And right now I'm living in San Francisco and working as a travel nurse.
Oh, that's pretty cool. My mom's a nurse too.
Oh, yeah?
Do you enjoy being a nurse?
Yeah, I really love being a nurse. I think it's super interesting to help people in the way that we do and work with a team that's focused on getting everyone to their best self.
That's definitely a good profession to be in. And travel nurse, that actually sounds really cool. So you get to travel around to different areas, or are you mostly in San Francisco?
Yeah, so I actually spent 5 years in New York City as a nurse full-time at New York Presbyterian. And then I decided, I kind of want to go to the West Coast. So I decided to head to San Francisco. And our contracts are 3 months at a time, but I just keep on finding new three-month contracts because I love San Francisco so much.
Oh, that's really fun.
Maybe so, one will end up in another part of the country.
Maybe, yeah. Being a travel nurse, you'll have a lot of opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
So can you share with all of us, what is your anosmia story?
Yeah, so my anosmia story begins actually when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was a sophomore in high school. So I was 15 years old. It was the second day of high school. And I had a weird summer leading up to that. I was preseason for soccer. I was losing a lot of weight and I thought I was just getting in shape, drinking a lot of water. It was a super hot summer and the humidity. But then I went to the doctor and they said I had type 1 diabetes. So that was a huge diagnosis for me. And it sparked this interest in nutrition and identifying what kind of food works for the body and how it would affect my blood sugar. So fast forward to 2018, I was just doing my like weekly meal prepping and grocery store run at Whole Foods in New York City. And I started to feel my blood sugar drop. So you get a little shaky, you get clammy, and your eyesight starts going. It's this strange feeling. It's hard to describe. But I quickly grabbed a juice off the shelf. And to raise your blood sugar, you need quick acting foods such as juices, icing, any kind of like that. But I wasn't fast enough and I fell to the floor and hit my head. Resulted in a brain injury. And I woke up in the ambulance and it felt like my head was being crushed underneath the car. It was super scary and I didn't really know what was going on. So I spent 10 days in the hospital after that with this brain injury. And at first I didn't recognize, I couldn't smell, and it resulted in my loss of taste as well because my headaches were so severe and I was dealing with the brain injury and my concussion. Mm-hmm. But I remember a few weeks after I left the hospitals when I realized I was suffering from anosmia, when I went to the movie theaters with my dad and I asked him to stop at the Walmart before so I could get something to clear my sinuses because I couldn't smell anything. And I was using nose spray and I was like, I really want to make sure I can like have some popcorn at the movies and enjoy it. But I got to clear my sinuses up. And I was using nose spray before the movie and I realized it wasn't working. And I was like, oh, wait, this might be a real thing. So that's when it kind of all hit me that I lost my sense of smell. And I went through this whole thing with depression and denial. I worked with a lot of ENT surgeons at the time and they gave me a smell book to see if like I was telling the truth. They were joking with me, I think, but they were like, oh, people use this as a disability claim all the time. Like you can't have lost your smell. And when I didn't pass, like it's this whole pamphlet of, you know, can you smell bleach? Can you, what does this smell like? And I didn't pass. And they were like, oh, wait, you really did lose your sense of smell. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't joking. So that all kind of hit me really quickly after.
I wonder if they gave you like the upsit, like the, I don't know if you're familiar with what test it is, but the one where it's like 40 different smells, scratch and sniff.
Yeah, it was a scratch and sniff, 40 different. And I remember flipping through it and I was getting upset through the whole thing because I was like, I can't believe that I don't smell any of this. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my like story with the whole thing. And obviously it's super recent, 2 years ago. I feel like I'm pretty new to the this community. And I'm thankful that I found you and your podcast that I can share my story on.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm grateful that you found it as well. So after you had this incident, you had your brain injury and you were just trying to heal from that, how long did it take you to figure out the word anosmia? Like, since you're in the medical profession, were you already familiar with the word, or how long did that part take?
So it's funny because I work in surgery, and I actually didn't know about the word at all. And I studied nursing. I've been a nurse for 5 years at that point. And I was like, wow, I had no idea anosmia was even a thing. So it wasn't until that summer. So I hit my head in February 2018, and it wasn't until August 2018 that I really found the word and identified as that. And my neurosurgeons and neurologists didn't even mention the word to me, which was interesting. Mm. Yeah.
That is interesting. So with your story in mind, one thing that pops out to me for myself being an anosmic is diet. So for you, you have both now anosmia and diabetes. And I can imagine just for myself, like not being able to eat things that are sweet or salty because needing to like more closely regulate my diet would be extremely difficult. So can you just tell us a little bit more about that piece of this? How has that been for you now not having, I don't want to assume, but I'm assuming that your sense of taste has been drastically impacted.
Yeah. So I can't taste, I can only taste bitter, sweet, salty, spicy.
Yeah.
And umami. That's to be determined a little bit, but I was extremely impacted by my injury with anosmia because of diabetes. When I first was diagnosed with diabetes, I became hyper-focused on nutrition and the brain and kind of identifying what food works for me. As a diabetic, I have real-time data of like food I intake and how it directly affects my my blood sugar. And overall, it can affect your mood. It can affect your energy level. So I became a little obsessed with this idea of like food and energy and how it's fueling, but also making it enjoyable for my palate. So after I fell and lost the sense, I was like, wow, I can't even enjoy the food I want to enjoy anymore because it doesn't even matter. The only thing it matters for is my fuel. But it became this like weird relationship where I was trying to figure out what food would taste good or if I could taste anything and then how it would affect my blood sugar. And I felt like at times I was force feeding myself because I couldn't even enjoy what I was eating. And when my blood sugar is low, I have to eat something in order to keep it up. So in the past, when I wanted to treat my low blood sugars, I would like enjoy like a really nice piece of fruit or maybe even like a cookie. And now I'm like, well, why would I eat any of that if I can't enjoy the taste of them? But shifted my kind of perspective after going through therapy for 2 years and kind of understanding what this new diagnosis means to me and what it means to my diagnosis of diabetes. And I'm being more creative with my cooking and eating based on more textures and really honing down on the senses that I do have when it comes to salty, sweet, bitter, and just harping on that.
Yeah. And one thing that stood out to me when we were talking via email beforehand is just like for myself, having a reduced sense of flavor, right? I don't really perceive flavors. It sounds like that's maybe the similar scenario for you. But for me, who I don't have diabetes, like I can go out and eat like a huge ice cream shake or something like that because it's more enjoyable or it's sweeter or
You know what I mean? It's colder. Yeah. So I was just thinking about that when we were talking via emails. Like, I don't even, it sounds like maybe you don't even have that same opportunity because of needing to regulate your blood sugar right. to indulge. Yeah.
That's 100% right. So I couldn't, a period of time after my head injury and my loss of smell and taste, I told my friends I wouldn't be able to go out to dinner with them anymore because I couldn't enjoy myself and I wouldn't be even, it wouldn't even be worth indulging. I would love to go get pasta dinners because it was so delicious and everything, mm-hmm. but the effect on my blood sugar, like, wasn't worth it. But of course, when I was enjoying the taste of it, it was worth it. But now I was just, there was no benefit to it. So yeah, I don't indulge as much. But for texture purposes, I love an ice cream cone, but right. not as often as it used to be because there's no sense of flavor.
Satisfaction.
There. Yeah, no satisfaction. And then on the back end, I just have to deal with my blood sugars all night. So mm-hmm. it's very interesting to see and understand that perspective of things. But I did go through a period of time where I was experimenting because I think I was in denial of the whole injury where I was eating French fries and pizza. And then I had to see if I could taste ice cream and then right. a hamburger, but none of it worked. And my blood sugars were totally out of control during that time.
Yeah, I can imagine. So another question that I like to ask everyone is when smell comes up for you in your daily life, do you take the time to explain to other people that you can't smell?
I do and I don't. It depends on the situation I'm in. With my coworkers, yeah, I tell them, but I don't really get into the whole story of it. I'm just like, yeah, I can't smell, which is interesting in the operating room. And I've learned that a lot of people have, you know, multiple stories of what happened to them and if they have phantom smells or if they had cancer and they lost their sense of smell. But I've been more open about it recently through the healing process of my diagnosis. So I do and I don't. It all is situational. But with the COVID outbreak, it's becoming more and more apparent that everyone's not regaining their sense of smell. So mm-hmm. I've definitely been more open.
And that something that you just mentioned was actually your workplace. So do you think that having anosmia impacts your work as a nurse now? Like, do you have to rely on other people to, like, do sniff tests for you, or does it just not come up?
So as an operating room nurse, it doesn't come up as much. Our patients are asleep, and there's a whole team of people in there, which is fabulous. And I get to work very closely with the doctors and the other nurses in my unit. So it doesn't come up as much. I actually feel thankful that I didn't lose my sense of sight or hearing, because then I would not be able to practice as a nurse anymore. Or I would probably, but not in the same kind of setting. So I do yeah. have a little silver lining. I'm grateful for that. I suffer from anosmia, not other senses where I wouldn't be able to practice.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
This next question I ask everyone, and I always preface it with, I like to just hear what people think about it, so there's no right or wrong answer. But do you self-identify as having a disability with anosmia?
I do. I do self-identify with having a disability with diabetes first. It can be a struggle for multiple people, and on job applications, I do put disability, and anosmia just adds another layer. I think that disability has a negative connotation at times, and I don't think it necessarily needs to. It's just we have a different sense and perspective of life. That doesn't mean that it is debilitating in the ways that we can be a part of life. It just means that we have a different worldview, which can bring other opportunities into the workplace or a community. But yes, I do self-identify as having a disability.
Thank you for sharing. I always liked it. Like I said, I really enjoyed that question because the word itself is so loaded that for some people, they feel very strongly that no, it's not. And some feel very strongly that it is. And it doesn't seem to be that there's a general consensus. So I just find it to be a really interesting question.
It's super interesting because I think it, like was presented as this word as kind of something that's like negative, right? It's something that will hold us back from something else, but mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily mean that. There's so many, I don't want to say disabled people, but there are so many people that suffer from a disability that have such an interesting perspective of the world that if you didn't have that disability, you wouldn't have that perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree. And another question that just occurred to me, so it's not on the list, but hopefully it's okay if I ask it, but
of course.
I'm just thinking in general, how has it been like for you sharing having anosmia with your family and friends? Have you felt like people understand it, or have you felt frustrated with their responses?
So this one ebbs and flows with me, definitely. I at times feel very frustrated because I feel like I'm the only one that's ever going through this. No one will ever understand, which is why I'm so thankful that I found your podcast and this whole community to make me feel more at ease with what I'm going through. But yeah, it's definitely frustrating because I think as much as they want to be supportive and helpful, there's just some things that that people don't realize they say, and that I wish I still had my sense of smell. And it's hard to explain, especially in, I think, the medical community, because some people don't think that can like really happen. They're like, what do you mean you can't smell? Like, are you sure? Like when I took the smell test, the ENT doctor, like I was close with him at work and we would operate together frequently. And he was just like, there's no way, like making me feel like I was lying about it. And I'm like, why would I be lying about this? Like, this is a serious thing. Like, he's like, there's no way. Like, no way. I'm like, I can't imagine that. And I'm like, no, it's truly what's happening. So yeah, I get frustrated when people kind of doubt my like truthfulness on it. Like, I'm not, it's just because it's such an invisible disease that it's hard for people to wrap their heads around.
Yeah. I agree. I've had that question quite often. And kind of to your point, I'm always just thinking to myself, like, why would I make that up?
Yeah, like it's the, like, that's the, I would never imagine it before I had anosmia. And it seems like such a strange thing for someone to make up. So why would that even cross someone's mind that we would make it up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember my therapist being like, picture your worst nightmare. Like, did you ever think this was your worst nightmare? And I was like, no, because I didn't even know it existed. I mean, we know more about like the blind and deaf community. I think that's more apparent in our society. And those are terrible, terrible senses to lose as well. But this one is so invisible that we can still function really and communicate in daily life that people don't think it can happen.
Yeah. And I'm actually glad to hear you talk about having a therapist and going to therapy for having anosmia, because I'm a big proponent of that. I also go to therapy myself, and I think that it's been extremely helpful. Anosmia is really scary, and especially since it's relatively new in your life, I think that having access to those kinds of support services are extremely important for people who are going through a smell disorder. So thanks for talking about it.
Yeah, I'm very big on the brain and the healing process of the brain through any traumatic experience, whether it's, you know, anosmia and or just any kind of life experience. I think it's important to kind of have a sounding board that's a little unbiased and ready to help you through the battle.
Yeah, definitely. So my next question for you is, what would you like people who do not have anosmia to know about what it's like living with it?
So I would like people to know that it's important to kind of pay attention to this sense while you have it, but we tend to focus on sound and sight and how beautiful things are, how wonderful music sounds, but not so much the sense of smell. And I never really realized that before I lost it. But there's so many things that are attributed to the sense of smell, like memories, walking into your parents' house during Thanksgiving and smelling the turkey, or just any kind of memories of places or people. And it's just a really important sense to kind of focus on. And I did feel and still do feel a little distance from the world, that I have to tweak my relationship to kind of figure out how to create memories without a sense of smell. So I would just encourage people to kind of focus more on it. And, you know, instead of being like, oh, that rainbow was so beautiful, like it was this color and it made me feel so warm inside, being like, oh, what was like the smell of the environment when I was there? Or for being from New Jersey, the smell of the beach was huge for me, like driving down the shore and opening the windows and the smell of the marsh. And I just want people to kind of focus on that now.
Yeah, that sounds like really good advice. And it's interesting you mentioned the ocean, because I mentioned that we currently live in New Jersey, and I finally just went over to the ocean. I went to the Long Branch Beach. Mm-hmm. And it's always so nice and awesome to go and experience new things, but there's always a missing layer for us, right?
Yeah. And that's how I felt initially. I was just like, oh, I really miss the smell of the marsh. And the smell of the marsh is super dirty and like old fish smelled, like rotten fish, but it was like a smell of my childhood that I totally miss.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes sense. So my next question, I think I know the answer, but maybe you can just elaborate again. If you could have a sense of smell again, would you want one back?
100%. I kind of answered in the last question.
Right.
But I think the biggest part of the smell, losing my sense of smell for me, is creating memories. So mm-hmm. I think I didn't realize how much I attributed memories to my sense of smell until it was gone. And I feel like over the last 2 years, I've been through the process of trying to create new memories, but not the smell would always be a trigger, right? Like, oh, that smells like so-and-so, or my mom used to make chocolate chip cookies and these smell just like that. There's just no, it's hard to create memories without a sense of smell. So yeah, I think mostly for memory purposes, and more so than food purposes and enjoying food, because I've created a world where now I look at color and texture with food. So just solely for memory purposes, definitely.
I think, yeah, I've talked about this with other guests who've come on the podcast as well, but I 100% know in my heart, and I don't have any scientific data, but 100% believe that my memory is terrible now compared to what it was when I had a sense of smell because of what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that it's so interesting. And when did you lose your sense of smell?
2009. So it's been about 11 years for me.
Oh, wow.
But just gradually over time, I think that your ability to form like more powerful memories linked to that like visceral sense of walking into a place, like for example, Target. Mm-hmm. Target has like a very specific Target smell. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but
I know what you're talking about. Like there's certain places that have certain smells. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so every time I go into a Target now, it was like this kind of like weird plasticky chemical smell.
Yeah.
it's just like, well, I'm here at Target, but I don't smell that part anymore.
Right. So, definitely interesting. No, I think it's definitely a huge thing with memory. I wonder if there are studies out there that they're recruiting for. I'd be so interested to join one of those.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a solid opportunity. I know some scientists do listen to the podcast, so any scientists interested in memory and smell, you have a lot of us who would love to be recruited.
Definitely.
So, Michelle, do you have anything else that you'd like to share?
Not really on personal side. I just want to thank you so much for creating this community and podcast for people that are suffering from any smell disorder to kind of open up and share their story. It was really hard for me to come on this podcast. I've canceled on you a few times. So thank you for being patient. But it's not easy to kind of relive what you've gone through and speak about it publicly. So thank you so much for being open and welcoming.
Of course. And you're welcome. And I understand exactly when you say that like today's not a good day for it, that not offended at all. And I'm just happy that you were able to do it today. So thank you for coming on and sharing your story.
Yes. Thank you.
So finally, my last question for you is, how can listeners find you on social media and get connected with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My Instagram handle is M-I-C-H-A-L-E-M-I. So it's Michelle, but M-I-C-H is Mish, and then Alemi, A-L-E-M-I. And that's, I'm just pretty much on Instagram or on Facebook, Michelle Alemi, but not as active on there.
Great. I'll make sure to include your Instagram handle in the episode notes so that people can get connected with you if they want to. And hopefully, at least virtually, you'll be able to meet some other people who also are dealing with anosmia.
Yeah, I've already connected with a few of your guests already. So I'm excited to keep connecting with other people in the community.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And I really appreciate speaking with you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Michelle for coming on the podcast and sharing her story with all of us. I really appreciate her willingness to talk about the importance of mental health when you're dealing with a traumatic experience. If you'd like to get connected with her online, you can find her on Instagram at Mish Alemi, and that's spelled M-I-C-H-A-L-E-M-I, and I'll make sure to include that in the episode notes as well. So this week I have some additional updates that I'd like to share with you all. Firstly, I'm excited to announce that the Smell and Taste Association of North America is being formed. Currently, there are no active patient organizations focused on smell and taste disorders in the United States of America. The aim of the Smell and Taste Association of North America, or STANA, is to become this much-needed resource. So STANA's mission is to provide a voice for people with smell and taste disorders through education and public awareness. We advocate for funding for research on smell and taste disorders. We collaborate with individuals living with these disorders, healthcare professionals, and institutions to provide evidence-based education, resources, and networking opportunities. We also partner with organizations around the world who are aligned with our vision to broaden our outreach. STANA's website is online at www.thestana.org, and our fundraising website is also available from there as well. It's a GoFundMe. We are raising funds to pay for the startup costs of becoming an established 501c3 organization. If you are able to donate to help us get started, that would be very much appreciated. If you're unable to donate at this time, please consider sharing the fundraising page with your network so we can raise the funds that we need to get established. If you have any questions, or if you'd like to get involved, please visit www.thestana.org or email us at info@thestana.org. Secondly, for this next announcement, you will probably remember friend of the podcast, Frauke Galia, founder of Falk Aromatherapy. So in September of this year, I participated in her 21-day Jumpstart Smell Training Program, which was an overall fantastic experience. Frauke's program provides daily guidance, a tracking journal, weekly check-ins, and a Facebook support group to connect you with others who are also participating in the same program. One of my major goals of this podcast has always been to let those of us with smell disorders know that we're not alone, and Frauke's smell training program embodies this sentiment really well. So the next program begins in January this year, and if you're interested in learning more and signing yourself up for the wait list, you can visit her site, which is falkaromatherapy.com/online-courses, and submit your email there. When program details are ready, Frauke will email you so you can get signed up. It was a truly fantastic experience for me to help me keep on track with my smell training, which you all know that I've struggled with. So please check it out, and I'll make sure to include that link in the episode notes as well. All right, so back to wrapping up our usual podcast business. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at thesmellpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at thesmellpodcast and visit the website at thesmellpodcast.com. I'm always interested in sharing listener stories. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you listen using iTunes. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the podcast. And finally, as always, if you would like to financially support the podcast, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode description. I genuinely do appreciate your support, and a huge shout out to everyone who currently contributes to the show, because your generosity is what makes the podcast possible. Until next time, have a fantastic day.